Monday Krishna Nanda Kumara. Monday Krishna Nanda Kumara. Nanda Kumara Mohana Rupa. Nanda Kumara Mohana Rupa. Mohana Rupa Madana Gopal. Mohana Rupa Madana.
The killing of a Gasura. One day before sunrise, Krishna said to Yashoda, "You are the queen of all the people, O auspicious one. Today I want to take my meal in the forest, so please do not turn down my request." Nandarani shook her head from side to side while saying, "No, no, no." Though not wanting to oppose his mother, Krishna, who removes all misfortune, took a vow to fulfill his cherished desire and said, "Mother, if you do not allow me to go, then in the name of God, I will go anyway." Balaram, who was always happy to serve his brother, blew loudly on his buffalo horn and readied the cows for the journey. Hearing Balaram's buffalo horn, the coward boys left their homes and rushed to meet Krishna. Then Krishna, the supreme controller of the three worlds, asked Yashoda, "Please make us happy by giving us a variety of foodstuffs." Yielding to her son's request, Yashoda prepared many kinds of fresh items for the boys' forest picnic. She made superbly thick yogurt that appeared like a vast ocean of cream, and heaps of soft, delicate butter that looked like slices in the moon. The rubbery appeared like foam on an ocean of shira. The chunks of cheese challenged piles of snow. Even the eyes of the demigods bulged joyfully upon seeing the koya. The attractive cakes looked like the orb of the full moon. The pieces of sugar candy looked as beautiful as a heap of hailstones. Very pure, fragrant, and pleasing yogurt appeared there. The many types of flat rice mixed with milk and aromatic camphor bathed the tongue in nectar and satisfied the mind. The rich, creamy sweet rice defeated the nectar of condensed moonshine. The meal also included fragrant lemon and mango pickles, papadum, namkeen, guja, and other varieties of savories. The unlimited quantity of foodstuffs competed with Yashoda's boundless motherly affection. The four types of eatables, which included items to chew, lick, suck, and drink, were expressions of Yashoda's love and devotion. No one had ever seen such a wide variety of appetizing foods. Being unfamiliar with the unique preparations, which were very rare and not available in the marketplace, no one could properly count them. Krishna looked joyfully upon all those delectable foods and told his associates, "Just give up your pride and carry all these preparations for our forest picnic." The coward boys submissively agreed to bring everything. Then Krishna, whose super excellent, enchanting beauty puts millions of cupids into distress, continued, "Oh friends, the hearts of mental speculators will never melt because they are hard and dry, and if you walk behind the calves, the dry and hard foodstuffs that you are carrying will not melt." Krishna divided the load of edibles equally among his friends. Seeing this, Mother Yashoda brought even more food items to distribute. Each boy carried a stick balanced on his shoulder with pots of foodstuffs tied on the ends. After decorating Krishna with a garland of fresh forest flowers, Yashoda handed him his celebrated flute. Due to Yashoda's deep affection for her beloved son, milk automatically dripped from her breasts and wet her blouse. Yashoda and the other mothers walked a short distance with the thousands of boys moving behind the thousands of calves. Just at that time, an astrologer arrived, announcing that a yajna must be performed to appease the stars and planets. Taking his mother's permission, Balaram stayed home to attend the astrologer. Krishna continued to walk along with the calves and coward boys. He carried a flute in his tender, leaf-like left hand, an elegant stick in his right, and an enchanting buffalo horn tucked in his belt. A peacock feather crown rested on his splendid curly locks. An attractive gunjamala hung from his neck. A pair of earrings dangled from his ears, and sparkling rings adorned his fingers. As Krishna ran along with the coward boys, a Vijayanti garland swung gracefully across his chest, graced with a splendid golden line. Actually, Krishna did not like gem-studded armlets, jeweled bangles, and the other valuable ornaments given by his mother. He preferred to wear the simple natural decorations produced from Braja's forest flowers, leaves, unguents, and mineral powders given by his beloved friends. The Gopa boys looked very attractive with the sticks of foodstuffs suspended over their shoulders and buffalo horns, panpipes, and flutes tucked in their belts. They wore gunjaberry ear ornaments and peacock feathers in their topknots. Wrapped in yellow cloth, their thin waists looked very pleasant and handsome. They wore armlets, bangles, earrings, necklaces, waist belts, ankle bells, and jewels tied with black strings looking like creepers. Krishna absorbed himself in sporting with his friends and calves. For a long time, Mother Yashoda curiously watched the boys play and wander behind the calves. Driving the calves forward, Krishna walked behind, as peacocks danced jubilantly upon seeing a monsoon cloud and lake-bound lotuses open to drink the sun rays. Mahadev, Brahma, Indra, and other self-satisfied demigods hid behind the clouds to view the breathtaking pastimes of Krishna. Lord Brahma was especially enthusiastic to witness the festival of Krishna's taking out the calves. Whenever Krishna sped ahead to a distant place, the coward boys scurried behind him, shouting excitedly, "I will touch him first." "Oh, no, you won't. I will touch him first." Upon reaching Krishna, they impelled him to choose the winner. The cheeks and lips of the Lord bathed in the nectar of his broad smile as he responded to his friends. "It does not matter who got here first, because somehow you have come here and met me." While rambling through the forest, one boy stole another boy's lunch package and passed it to a third. And when the boy discovered his lunch bag stolen, he tried to revive it, but the thief would throw it to another. After stealing someone's lunch bag, they quickly took some food from it and replaced it with their own. The boy who lost his food smiled upon getting it back. Some boys snatched each other's horns, flutes, or herding sticks. One boy stole a second boy's gunja mala, and then a third boy would steal the mala from the second, and then a fourth boy took from the third. Finally, after a short time and a few scuffles, all the boys recovered their personal belongings. In this way, Krishna's friends enjoyed the festival of stealing. While the calves grazed in distant places to relish fresh green grasses, the gopas leaned their poles against the trees and rested in the shade with Krishna. Then, for the pleasure of Krishna, they invented various games. Seeing an intoxicated peacock dancing nearby, the boys mimicked its jerky neck movements. Contracting their bodies in funny poses, they attempted to imitate the ducks sitting in the marsh. Some boys played with frogs, and when the frogs jumped in the water, the boys immediately dove in after them. When birds flew overhead, the boys ran after their shadows on the ground, trying to follow their exact courses. They scared the monkeys by exactly imitating their facial expressions and pulling their tails. When the monkeys climbed the trees, the boys followed and jumped with them. Some boys sang and danced with exaggerated steps, while other boys laughed at their antics. One boy pretended to be an emperor, and others adopted the roles of his subordinate kings and ministers. A coward boy constable caught a boy disguised as a thief, while others angrily chided him. One posed as a judge and sentenced that thief. Two boys acting like lambs charged and butted heads, while an audience of boys cheered the contest. One boy roared like a tiger to frighten the innocent coward boy lambs. Sneaking up from behind, one boy covered the eyes of a friend with his palms and said, "Guess who?" As lion cubs frolic in a forest, and as intoxicated baby elephants play with their parents, the coward boys of Braj, the personified forms of bliss, joyfully sported with the Supreme Lord appearing amongst them as a simple village boy. Krishna, who killed demons while tending the calves, who was inconceivable to peaceful, self-controlled persons, and who was always restless, looked like a dark cloud floating across a moonlit sky as he moved behind the cows. In this way, Krishna and the cowherd boys spent their time absorbed in play and merriment. The cowherd boys joke with one another, "Oh, brothers, let us see who can run the fastest, Krishna or us." Krishna kept the lead as they raced a short distance. They stopped abruptly, however, upon noticing a peculiar sight. It was a demon, the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura, whom Krishna had recently vanquished. Burning with anger and lamentation, that demon had come to Vrindavan to avenge the loss of his relatives. The nasty, vicious demon assumed the form of a gigantic, envious python with a huge mouth extending from the surface of the earth to the heavenly planets. At every moment, his hideous body continued to expand. His vast, gaping mouth seemed to swallow the whole creation along with all of its moving and non-moving living entities. Brahma and all the demigods shook in fright at this embodiment of sin, Agha, who was appropriately named Aghasura. Awestruck and bewildered by what they saw, the cowherd boys said, "Oh, look, what is this strange mountain cave? Just examine closely and try to figure it out. Who on earth will not be curious upon seeing this unusual cave? From long neglect, the cave looks like the deep mouth of a huge snake. The twin mountain peaks appear like two rows of teeth. The two vines dangling in the breeze by the opening of that cave seem to be the frightening forked tongue of a snake. The red oxide dust blowing out of the mouth of the cave, indicating a mine of minerals, seems like its fiery, poisonous breath mixed with reddish gold sparks. Just smelling that smoke, which appears to be the snake's breath, gives one a severe headache. The vines and creepers surrounding the cave, which look like hands waving us into it, appear like the ugly veins and arteries around a snake's gaping mouth. The two dazzling ruby boulders resting just above the mountain cave appear like the beautiful eyes of the snake, waiting to mesmerize anyone who glances at them. The strong wind coming from the cave, which shakes the trees in the forest, resembles the exhalation of a big serpent. The smoky glow of the mountain seems like the dislocation of the snake's body caused by his poison-filled breath. The large cave looks like the massive mouth of the snake. Who amongst us is not overwhelmed with fear upon seeing this mysterious creature? Though disturbed with dread and doubt, the cowherd boys decided to enter the mouth of the cave. One boy said, "Oh, brothers, if it is a demon, Krishna will easily kill him and protect us." All the gopis had firm faith in Krishna. Gazing at the beautiful, smiling face of Krishna, they laughed and clapped their hands while walking toward the python. Seeing that they intended to enter that snake demon, Krishna, the prince of Vrindavan, tried to stop his friends by shouting in a sweet voice that spread throughout the creation. "Hey, boys, stop! Do not go inside. It is not a mountain cave. It is a snake." But it was too late. They did not hear Krishna's words of warning because they had already fallen unconscious from inhaling the poisonous vapors within the viper's throat. Feeling like he had lost some precious jewels, Krishna cried piteously. He only thought how to kill the demon and save his devotees. Then Krishna, fully confident in his unlimited abilities, nonchalantly walked into the demon's mouth. Seeing this, the demigods wailed in anguish, "Alas, alas!" But Kamsa and other demoniac friends of Aghasura rejoiced by cheering, "Ha, ha, ha!" Upon hearing the distressed crying of the demigods, Krishna, the master of all mystic yogis, decided to finish the asura. The heart of the snake shook in fear of his imminent destruction. Although adept in mystic illusions, the demon's vast intelligence had now become bewildered by his false ego. He tried desperately to close his mouth, but he could not. Because of Krishna's superior mystic power, the snake lost all control over his movements and just sat with his mouth stuck open. The snake felt Krishna to be a hot, fiery spark burning his throat. A second later, Krishna expanded himself within the throat of the snake until the demon's body exploded like an overripe green melon. Krishna's transcendental body contains unlimited opulences of beauty and perfect action. His elegance rivals the rising moon, and his compassion excels the comfort of soothing moonshine. After killing that ugly demon, Krishna revived his friends with the pleasant stream of nectar emanating from his beautiful transcendental form. Then he came out of the demon's mouth with the coward boys and calves. As Krishna left the mouth of the demon, he appeared like the sun rising from behind a mountain. Wearing an attractive forest garland hanging to his knees, Krishna looked as gorgeous as a fresh blue rain cloud. At that time, everyone saw the spirit soul of the demon, more brilliant than hundreds of suns and moons, merge in the body of Krishna. Who can describe the merciful nature of the Lord? First the demon let Krishna enter his belly, and then Krishna allowed him to merge within his body. Appreciating the wonderful glories of the Lord, Brahma, Shiva, and other demigods offered prayers which sanctified the world as they echoed throughout the universe. Various drums such as bheris, kettle drums, and dundubis, and other instruments reverberated in all directions. The wives of the Gandharvas and Vidyadharas sang joyously in high-pitched voices. As the wives of the Siddhas beat mridangas, Urvasi and other heavenly nymphs danced ecstatically. The best of the Kinnaras sang sweet melodies. Becoming deaf to all the vibrations, the celestial denizens submerged in the sound waves of that ocean of jubilation. Intoxicated with bliss, they showered flowers from Nanda Kanana on Krishna. What more can be said? The beat of Shiva's Dhamru drum predominated everywhere. In great euphoria, Lord Shiva danced so wildly that he cracked the pot-like covering of the universe. As he danced, the crescent moon on his head poured a stream of nectar. When that nectar touched the skulls on Shiva's necklace, the skulls assumed bodies and danced joyfully with great skill. Astonished by the scene, the demigods exploded with uproarious laughter. The coward boys appeared like they had just left the jaws of death. They felt completely relieved and happy to see the tender lotus face of the peaceful Prince of Braj, which looked more attractive than the rising sun. The transcendental deeds of the Lord completely eclipsed the glories of the sun. One after another, the boys embraced Krishna while talking excitedly. One boy said, "Oh Krishna, while we played, that terrible demon devoured us and knocked us out with a burning poison. How did you bring us back to life?" Krishna replied, "I am the perfect antidote to neutralize poison and also kill the poison giver. If a man smells this medicine, he will become joyful and relish it like the taste of honey. Even the dead will come back to life and enjoy sweet rasa if they smell this medicine." Krishna's witty remarks increased the coward boys' loving friendship for him. Then the coward boys, the Lord's eternal associates, enthusiastically embraced each other. Swelling with pride for his beloved friend, one boy said, "I told you before that Krishna would finish this demon, just as he has previously killed Bakasura."